This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jimmy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. There's a southern accent where I come from. The young ones call it country, the Yankees call it dumb. I got my own way of talking, and every word's begun.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, everybody. How you doing? Welcome to Trinidad World Recording Studios here in Fort Worth. Oh, man, summer's starting to wind down. The heat's starting to go away. I know what you're doing out there. I know what you've been doing all summer because I'm in tune with what's going on with the Texas music fan. You email me, you come to the shows. God bless you all. You're out there floating adrift in the sea, looking for that light on the shore in the fog. And what do you have to guide you in there? That is the P2 Podcast, my friend. Well, a very special day indeed here. It is sort of a reunion, a re-coming together for me and my old friend. You know who he is. I'm talking about Kurt South is here. Hello, South.
How you doing, P2?
I'm doing very well. Well, man, you know, we had your old friend Buddy Huffman on the last couple of podcasts, making Grayson Rock Band great.
Buddy Huffman.
Buddy Huffman. He plays, what is it, the first Tuesday of every month at Woody's?
Yeah.
Comes in, does an acoustic show. Man, I went over there and played one with him. Had a good time a couple weeks ago.
What does Buddy Huffman weigh?
What does
the
Buddy Huffman
question.
Weigh? I don't know if that's the topic for this show. Someone's weight?
No,
he's a big, not a heavy guy, but tall.
No, he's just
tall,
he's like 6'7". There was a radio show.
I bet he's about
the
size of Troy Aikman, but maybe about 6'2".
6'2"? I'm 6'2", and he's easily 4 inches taller than me.
Oh, he's not that tall, is he? I'd say 6'4", 220 is my guess.
I'd say 6'6", 260.
6'6", 260?
Dude, he's a big dude.
Huffman, forgive.
Let me put it in the frame for you.
I'll tell you where South lives. You can go throw eggs on his house.
Well, no, the reason I brought that up is one time,
weight?
Buddy and I
is
were
that where this is going.
Buddy and I were doing a radio show together years ago, and the DJ turns and looks at us. And goes, "Hey, what's kind of a trivia question we can throw out there to get the people to call in and win tickets to y'all's show?" And I just. It was like 8 in the morning, and I had about 6 beers in me.
This is back in those days?
Yeah, yeah. And I just took a look at Buddy sitting there, being much bigger than me, and I said, guess Buddy's weight. And that turned out to be the contest
guess
question.
Buddy Huffman's weight.
I weigh 200 pounds right now. Huffman's got 60 pounds on me. Come on.
I don't know, 60. I wouldn't say that.
Dude,
he's a big guy.
Great soccer player at University of Texas back in
the day. Yes. Oh, very athletic. Great songwriter, a rocker in his own right.
Real handsome.
Handsome, genteel, intelligent.
He is. He's everything.
And just large.
And large.
Just a big dude for a rocker. Well, man, we have had... So, man, Huffman was here the last couple of weeks. Kurt and I realized, not until recently, we really hadn't seen a lot of each other this summer here as we come to the end of summer 09. What a summer. Of course, we already had the podcast on Michael Jackson. As you said, the travesty of the funeral, et cetera.
They still haven't buried him.
They still haven't buried him. Oh, man. Are they going to entomb him like Ted Williams or Walt Disney? Or Is Walt Disney frozen too?
Yeah, Disney's frozen.
Disney's on ice somewhere.
He is on ice somewhere.
Disney on ice. Mickey Mouse skating on a rink? No, Walt Disney cryogenically preserved. So yes, indeed, we have had just a heck of a summer. A lot of heat. Of course, I was up in at the Great Blue Mountain Ranch, where I went to camp as a kid, where I met my wife. We have a long history up there. So we still go up to Colorado, get to spend some time up there with the kids this summer. Little out of pocket. So, man, it's good to be back here, man, getting back in the flow of the things. Football season kind of starting up, you know, that briskness in the air. Even the temperature drops to like 99 degrees, you just get that sense briskness. That fall is right around the corner.
Yeah.
Just glorious.
I am so beaten down by the heat.
Beaten down by the heat, yeah. I mean, and we were playing some shows, and I couldn't help but notice looking over at Stu Wiley on the drums and Blue Marshall on the bass. And I noticed that their fall growth of beard is starting to come in, you know, just like when the leaves turn, you know, just you know, the deer starting to, you know, grow their winter coats. Just here comes the beards coming out for the full band. Oh, it's just that time of year. Glorious.
Unfortunately, around here, fall doesn't begin until about mid-December.
That's right, until about Thanksgiving. We have had some snows on Thanksgiving, though, some ice storms. That's very early.
I welcome them.
Remember that old Cowboy game with the Dolphins with the snow all over the old Texas Stadium?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what do you make of the new Texas Stadium? That's been a big summer deal. You know, Jerry World here, the new Cowboy Stadium. We can talk a little sports. Kurt and I are big sports fans. I'm just trying to think of some other summer events maybe that you and I hadn't touched base on. Is the new Cowboy Stadium a travesty, much like the Jackson funeral?
No.
No, you like it?
Nothing that has to do with the beloved Dallas Cowboys is a tragedy.
Yes.
Or a travesty, excuse me.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I'm pumped about the stadium. I'll probably never set foot in it.
No, but it's not very musician friendly with those $500 tickets that I got.
Well, but you know, with NFL football, I much prefer watching from home on a nice big flat screen TV.
Man, I'm telling you what.
Game in person's a little rough.
The great Kevin Haggard, who is the patron saint of the Philip Richard and the Full Band, our good friend down there in Houston, Texas, has been kind enough to invite me recently to went and saw the Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers last year. At the old Texas Stadium. I went to a preseason game a few nights ago. Texans and
the Titans.
New Orleans Saints.
Oh, you went to it?
Yeah, we did. Down before our firehouse show. Always fun to go to the game. I tell you what, though, man. It's you've got to be really into it. Because and I went to several Tennessee Titan games when I lived in Nashville. And, man, I tell you what. I mean, I like the college football game.
Yeah.
For some reason, you kind of assume that walking is part of the deal. You get in there. Yeah. It's not that expensive inside the stadium. But the pro game, man, is it can be a beating, dude.
The pro prices.
It's expensive. And, God, you just got the TV timeouts and the instant replay and the challenges. And man, the thing I notice is just if you're up there in the end zone or something, there's a play and a flag flies. You see the guy, the ref will kind of take the ball and mark it off, and they're talking to the coaches. And, man, if you're not watching on TV, you're just like, what the hell's going on? I mean, if you're at home, they say, I think they're looking to see if the guy had control of the ball before he went out of bounds. You know, you're on top of what's going on. Oh, they're going to review the play.
You have Al Michaels to guide you through what's going on.
Yeah, so you're sitting there watching it play from five different angles. You're like, oh, man, he was at – you're standing up in your chair going, he had his foot in bad. Dude, that's a catch. That's a catch, you know, and it's part of the fun. But if you're at the game – You're standing up every 5 seconds to let people walk in front of you with their nachos, you know, and you're looking around. There's music blasting. It's never quiet. They're just just like in the first quarter. I'm just like, good Lord. I'm just like, my head is throbbing by like the halftime.
Yeah, it's sensory overload.
It's something. I'm just kind of like, man, you know, can't we just sit here?
You're too far away. You're never going to have a seat, the seat that's good enough to let you in on what's really going on. I really don't like being around other people.
Well, I know you don't. You really abhor the crowds. You know what's funny, though, man? When I was younger, there was a sense of going to the Cowboy game. You went there like after church. Like you'd maybe go there in a coat and tie. Or like, you know, like in the late 70s, maybe not a coat and tie, but you'd kind of dress up.
Yeah.
And, dude, it's just, you go to those games, man, you're just out there. Everyone's just, everyone's the shirtless.
The unwashed masses.
God, just, they all got 50-yard line seats. I'm like, who are these people, man? They're just down there in their costumes, covered with paint, or just wearing, you know.
And how about an 850 beer, you know?
Oh, dude, I got a hot dog. I got a chopped beef sandwich. I mean, it was $9, and a Coke was $5. Reliance Day. I mean, I spent $15 for a. Yeah, but I expected that going in. We had a great time. The game was entertaining. The stadium was great. I guess my question is with Jerry World. I mean, this holds 100,000 seats. In our second segment, we're going to get into kind of the problems that the concert business has had this summer. Oh my! You assume Aerosmith, AC/DC, and all these guys are selling out concerts. Oh man, they're too big. They sell it out, man. Bruce Springsteen, think again, my friends. So I do look at these economic times. It's something as gigantic as Jerry's new stadium out there. They got the U2 show coming, I guess, in October.
Yeah.
McCartney was there. Now they say McCartney sold it out. Paul McCartney came and played the Cowboy Stadium.
Here's my question. George about the Strait, you know, the McCartney show.
Yeah. You know anybody went to that? Did you talk to anybody?
No, I don't know anybody who went, but they were saying
Paul McCartney came out. When was that? August 15th or something? Or yeah, no, just a few nights ago. Last week, yeah.
When they do concerts there, do they cut the stadium in half, or what do they do?
No, I think it's a concert. It holds 60,000. They must cut it in half, though, or something.
Because I heard that, you know, they were talking about between the Ranger game and the Paul McCartney game.
Yeah.
There's only like 68,000 people in Arlington for those two events. Well, I think a good Ranger game draws 20.
Yeah.
25. So I got bad information, but
I mean, if they're going to say that Cowboy Stadium holds 100,000 on game day, that's no one sitting on the field, mind you. Is that how many seats it's got? So if you had McCartney, I mean, you got him seating on the field. He's got 50 or 60, 70,000, I'm like, man, they've got to be not using one of the end zones.
Right.
Or something,
well, they probably knock off a third of it for the stage and production and all that.
That's probably right. That's probably right.
Because I think George Strait, they said they had like 70,000 people. Dude, and it was just sold out to the Beatles, you know.
And that was the first night. That was the first thing ever, right?
Yeah.
At the new stadium. George Strait. Of course, you can bank on old George Strait, man, any day of the week to put some butts in some seats.
You could put him up out in a parking lot.
Huh?
You could put him out in a parking lot anywhere and... Oh, 70,000 people show.
That's right. All these other acts are building catwalks, running around, doing cartwheels, setting things on fire, explosion. What does Strait do? He puts on his hat, walks out, stands on the stage, and plays his songs. Mm-hmm. Sold out. What does that tell the rest of us?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? U2's new show, they're going to be, it's 360, you know? We've got to put the stage, everything's going to be spinning around. Or something. It's just some sort of staging extravaganza, evidently, this new U2.
Can I go ahead and announce my official back turning on U2?
Man, U2 has crossed over...
Kings of douchebaggery.
Yeah.
They really are.
Well, and you know what, man? It goes back to the old Rod Stewart, you know, shaking his ass when he gets older. Mm-hmm. U2's never been quite a shake-your-ass band, but definitely sort of a, you know, rock and roll, tough
they
guy.
They have always been a shake-your-ass band.
Yeah, Bono, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. But, man, I always liked their music. People love U2, you know. But just, after a certain point, man.
Unforgettable Fire, man. Great, great record.
Great record. Yeah, Joshua Tree, Octung Baby.
Yeah.
And their last real great record, All You Can't Leave Behind, was a bit of a surprise, kind of a comeback after Pop and some other stuff they'd kind of done. Zooropa, they've kind of lost it. Great record out of nowhere. All You Can't Leave Behind, I wasn't paying attention. They had a new record. That was 2000, and that was right around like 9/11. They were a relevant band. They were kind of the guys who could pick up the flag, so to speak, and play the Super Bowl halftime show and make it a really cool thing.
Bunch of Irishmen picking up the flag.
That's right. And that was, 2001. So you kind of get, man, we're almost 10 years after. You're kind of like, man, what purpose do they, what are they going to do now? They're just going to roll out a big video screen and I don't know, the lemon. They're going to go get the lemon again. I don't know. Get out there.
I'd forgotten about the lemon.
I don't know. I mean, so I don't know. God love them. All the success in the world. You too.
But to answer your question, can they sell 100,000 tickets for Cowboy games?
Yeah.
All day long, because the Dallas Cowboys are bigger than the Stones, the Beatles.
Is that right?
Yes. All day long.
Man, I think you're probably right. It's astounding to me to go inside Reliant Stadium, to look at the Cowboy Stadium and say, man, there's 100,000 people. I'm worried about traffic, walking forever. Of course, I'm wearing boots and jeans and a leather jacket and a felt hat when it's 104 degrees.
That's your own fault.
Anyway, that's my own fault. But I accept that. And walking, you know, the walking, the money, the volume, just, you know. So I wonder. So when I see 100,000 in there, gleefully spending that money, you know, proud to make the walk, proud to just rip off their shirt and say, put me on the 50-yard line, give me my $12 nachos, I scratch my head. Much like I went into a crowded Bennigan's one time in a small town, looking for something good to eat. I was like, let's go to Bennigan's. That's a lot.
Went to the wrong place.
That's lousy. We'll go eat there. Well, guess what? We're in there. It's like a 30-minute wait.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Keith Robinson. We were all living in Austin, living our hip little lives, right? And I remember just looking around going, I can't believe there's so many people in here. And Keith, my drummer, just goes, man, this is the real world, man. This is what everybody eats.
Yep.
And I'm like, this is the real world? He's like, yeah. And I just remember thinking, I'm not part of it. You know, it's kind of a lonely feeling, you know. 100,000 people want to be here, but I don't. What does that mean?
Hey, sports is bigger than rock and roll ever was.
I wonder, though, man, as the home viewing experience gets better and better with HDTV, widescreen, being able to skip commercials, replay, the home viewing experience has become quite a fun deal.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that traffic and not knowing what's going on starts to become a bit of a beatdown at some point. People start to stay home.
Well, if you think about sports versus music and who goes to concerts, who goes to see sports, think about this. The Texas Rangers do a three-game homestand and sell 25, 30,000 tickets each night, three nights in a row.
Yeah.
How many music acts can come through town and do that?
Yeah, that's right. That's
right. If you think about the numbers of people that go to sporting events, it's staggering. I mean, just in Green Bay, Wisconsin, a town of about 130,000 people every Sunday.
Half of them go to the game.
80,000 of those people are in the stadium.
That's right.
You know, 8-9 weeks out of the year.
Yeah, and it is phenomenal.
You know, you couldn't put Springsteen or the Stones up there and do that. I mean, sports is sports drives the culture more than music ever did.
It does, man, because those games mean something every week. And and past a certain point, the U2 tour, where they're 9/11's going on, they're playing they mean something at that point. But there are tours and years and maybe decades where a band doesn't mean a whole lot. You know, it's kind of like, man, he was Woodstock. You know, he was punk rock, or he was new wave, or it's hard to stay relevant, you know.
Which that's what's amazing about George Strait is that he just has never had a down period.
That's right.
Never.
Yeah, that's right.
In 30 years,
he came on in the mid '80s and just has escalated and held his ground. He's never his new record's no good or
never. He
and, consistent.
You know, he'll be like that forever. He'll just.
That's right, man.
You know, he'll be 70 just standing up there.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
No doubt. Well, man, that's kind of catching up some we kind of went all over the map there. Summertime. Buddy Huffman's weight, Cowboy Stadium. Well, we're going to expand on this a little bit. Bob Lefsetz, our old friend, the Lefsetz letter, and you need to read him. He's always got the inside track. He's talking to the agents and the promoters and stuff about ticket sales. Some alarming concert ticket. Of course, summer's always the big concert season. You know, we read about Springsteen and Aerosmith and all these guys going on tour, McCartney. Man, sales, I think across the board, it's safe to say we're so sluggish. All kinds of crazy stuff going on to try and get people in venues for live music. We'll talk about the dinosaurs a little bit this summer, what's going on, what it all means for us musicians out there and all of our friends listening on PhilPritchett.com and Radio Free Texas. Concert talk. Is the concert struggling, Kurt?
Apparently so.
We're going to talk about that next.
There's a dream that I keep having where my mama comes to me. She kneels down by the window and she says a prayer for me. I got my own way of praying. And
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett on the P2 podcast here with my good friend Kurt South. email us, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me, 817-733-5256. Book Phil Pritchett and the full band, or come record here at Trinidad World Recording Studios. It's what we do. Oh, man. Well, Kurt South is here. We've been talking about the summer that was, the summer of 2009, all the things that went on, the heat, the opening of new stadiums, the concert business we started to touch on there at the end of our last segment. Yeah, I wanted to get in. I was reading some astounding things online, stories of really more like the East Coast, where some of the recession has really taken hold.
Yeah.
Housing and jobs and everything have just been slashed. You know, when people get tired of, you know, $15 hamburgers and, you know, $12 packs of cigarettes in New York, what do? They move west.
Yeah.
Young man, you know, you're going to move to Kansas where you can go eat in Manhattan, Kansas, eat a steak for $4 or the Blue Plate special. Generally speaking, but that, you know, same with California, you know, really has just been, of course, obliterated. But talking about the concert ticket sales in those types of markets, Bob Lefsetz was pointing out that, and I wasn't really aware of this, but, you know, like Live Nation, these types of venues, you know, they're just kind of looking at their whole season. You know, you got Paul McCartney, you got Aerosmith, you got stuff they're promoting, and if something's really selling slow, they noted that AC/DC was selling really, really slow in these markets, as was Aerosmith, who is interesting because they're from Boston, their hometown.
Yeah.
But the guys were in the parking lot, Live Nation employees with tickets saying, hey, you know, buy two tickets to McCartney, get four Aerosmith tickets free, you know, stuff like that. you know, and pretty fascinating, man. It seems like there's such a glut of people. You know, I kind of point out the old, when Led Zeppelin wanted to go tour, they were 30 years old, and there wasn't a bunch of heavy rock bands that were 68
right.
and 50 years old and that had come before them.
There were none.
There were none. You had like Sinatra kind of stuff. Then you kind of had this first wave of sort of British arena rock, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, maybe after some of the mid-60s Beatles guys. But the point was there wasn't a lot of competition.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of always compared it to, we're talking about sports, the Cowboys. You know, you look at Tony Romo, the Cowboy quarterback. You're like, well, okay, you know, what would his chances be on the Cowboy if they said, well, you know, Romo, he's a good quarterback and everything, but, you know, he's going to have to beat out Troy Aikman and Roger Staubach.
Dan Marino.
And Dan Marino. You know, we still got those guys. Just wait a minute. Those guys are like 50, 60 years old. It's like, yeah, but
they're still playing.
Still playing. People still want to see him. They still do pretty good.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll be damned if we're going to bench him. I mean, it'd be pretty hard for Romo to get in there. I think it's safe to say. Of course, in sports, you're done by the time you're about 30
right.
or mid-30s at the latest. So there is sort of a you always need new guys in sports. There's always drafts. Guys just keep getting younger coming out of high school and the NBA, et cetera. The concert business, oh, alas, nothing opens up, man. You're trying to play the Granada Theater. Well, man, that's the same night as Billy Joel. Just Billy Joel. He's still playing, you know, U2, the Stones. They haven't gone anywhere. And man, it starts to be a glut of talent. You think of how many bands have come out, how many Grammys have been awarded over the last 20, 30 years. You know, Bonnie Raitt won Grammys. Well, you think she can get out here and compete with, you know, she wants her guarantee and her $35 ticket price at some, you know, some shed this summer. Well, that's going to be tough, man, having Aerosmith the night before or whatever.
Yeah.
What's the moral of the story, Sal?
I think the real story isn't necessarily that. Well, there are tons of bands out there, and they never retire. So everybody's competing for a piece of the same dollar. But
right.
I think it's also a function of these bands from the old guard back when radio dictated everything we heard and everything we're familiar with.
Right.
Those bands, they're losing ground not to each other necessarily, but they're losing ground to to, I think, a lot of smaller independent acts that people are able to discover on their own.
Yeah, just and smaller clubs.
Because there's a lot of those acts who are doing incredibly well on the road, better than a lot of these old acts are.
Right.
And I think the pie is divided up in a lot of smaller pieces. Mm-hmm. And a really bad night for Aerosmith is an incredible night for the little indie guy.
Right, right.
And people know about these bands more. It's 10, 15, 20 bucks to get in versus 60, 70, 80, 100 bucks to get into these big shows.
It's got to be impossible for these big acts who once sold out stadiums. And that you get to that place and you just kind of think, man, this is where we belong. I think it is hard for guys to. I mean, you just see guys start going to smaller venues or places like that, lowering ticket prices. Very hard, though. My good friend Jim Beavers, a great songwriter in Nashville, but he worked for a few years in the record business, a lot of years with Capitol Records, but he was at Virgin Records when Virgin put out the infamous Ronnie Millsap 40 number one hits.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 40 number one hits. Count them up. They're all there. Ronnie Millsap. But Jim talked about just shaking his head and it's just how Ronnie and these old. I said, what's so funny about Ronnie? He just goes, man, he comes in here for meetings. He said, man, guys like that, they just live the rest of their lives at their peak. You know, they don't back down. They don't, we're not traveling with the entourage or the bus anymore. He just goes, Ronnie walks in here. Nice guy, but man, he's just got the same personnel. A lot like Michael Jackson. He still lived at 1984.
Right.
Today, you know, and you're just like, man, you don't have that kind of income anymore. Yeah, you don't. But man, these guys never seem to back down from it. So Millsap would just, he said, man, he just rolls in here. He can't understand why his new record's not on the radio. He's like, man, Ronnie, your last song on the radio was about 1985. You know, people just want to hear.
Millsap still does huge live business.
Yeah, oh yeah, he does. He's one of the kind of a country version of maybe these classic rock kind of acts.
But he's still.
40 number one hits, you're going to do some live business.
He thinks that, he's just living his life like he has a top five single right now.
That's right.
And he doesn't. And he can't get that. You know, he went 25 years, that's all he knew, and all of a sudden he's not there anymore. You know, how do you go back to just...
and he's still just, man, we got a great new song here. And, you know, it's real old school with a steel guitar. He's just kind of like, man... Yeah. And Jim's like, man, they just don't get it.
Gospel song or something.
Yeah, man. Just some with a choir or something. He just goes, man, don't you even listen to country radio anymore?
Well, you know, I was online this week and came across Little Feet, legendary... Great, great band.
Covered by Phil Pritchett and the full band, of course. Little Feet.
Of course, you know, Little Feet isn't the Little Feet of old necessarily. The great Lowell George, who was kind of the heart and soul of Little Feet, passed away in 79. But, you know,
they still got a couple of the original drummer and piano player, a couple guys. I mean,
Paul Bearer and that Tackett guy. Yeah, I mean, they wrote a lot of those songs and stuff. But I came across their stuff and just got on their website, and man, they are still touring all the time.
Oh, the Doobie Brothers we talked about before.
But Little Feet, they're just playing. Here's an example. I saw they're out in California playing some shows, and one night it's Jason Bolen and the Stragglers in San Juan Capistrano, California, the Coach House. And the next night it's Little Feet. And I'm like, cool, the Stragglers, man, playing out on the West Coast, doing a big club date. Little Feet, and I looked up the venue.
Yeah,
it's a 300 seat venue.
You're kidding me.
And Little Feet, you know, I mean, they were one of the biggest bands of the late 70s. Man.
Yeah,
they were huge.
They're still going, man. You know,
30 years later, they're playing a club that if you or I went out to California, we would play that club.
That's right. Yeah,
you know, so you know, they've gone up, and they've been at the top, and they're, you know, they're all still out there working, making a living. But
that's right.
But maybe to their credit, they're able to still work and still make a living because they were able to ride the roller coaster and come back down gracefully. Go, hey, we know what? It's not 78 anymore. We're not going to sell out the Forum in Los Angeles. But have some fans who will pay $30 to see us at the small club.
Right. And just take what it gives you.
We don't need the semis with all of our equipment and the two buses and all this stuff. We can get by with one bus and a trailer.
Yeah, they don't live at their peak.
Right. You know, and I think...
we're talking about going to football games earlier. One of my great experiences going to a football game was going to a Monday night game between the Titans and the Packers, the Brett Favre-led Packers. When I lived in Nashville, I went with Jim Beavers, my friend I mentioned. He had box seats, man, 50-yard line, the Capitol Records suite. So, dude, I mean, that basically ruined my football viewing forever. So I'm in there with a flat screen, a leather recliner.
Yeah.
With a beautiful woman bringing me cocktails. Now, that's the way to go to the football game. We parked, like, under the field and took the elevator up. I'm like, now, this I can do. Sign me up. Well, who comes out to sing at the halftime show? This was 2001. Who comes out to sing a halftime show to heal a war-torn nation?
Lee
Greenwood.
The ass-whip Greenwood. Spray on tin. Stars and Stripes.
There you go,
man.
Proud to be American. Lee Stunt News. I know I'm free. I don't think anything of it. I'm like, oh, Lee Greenwood, you know, whatever. all of a sudden, the Capitol execs jump up, scrambling around, grabbing their cell phone. Oh, it's Greenwood. It's Greenwood. God, what? I'm like, what's going on? Jim just turn around. They go up and they literally lock the door, kind of barricade the door of the suite, lock the crib. Lock it. They put a chair under the thing. I'm like, what are you doing? Something Greenwood. He's going to sing that song. He's going to try to get up here and get in the box. I go, he's on Capitol. They just roll their eyes. Like, man, he got dropped in like 87. I'm like, well, so what's the deal? Same Ronnie Millsap deal. They go, man, he's going to come up here with his guys, with his crew, just talking about, man, I got some great new material, man. We got to get people what they want, get this new album out. Oh, he just goes, dude, he'll come up here and just absolutely beat us in the submission. So the Capitol dudes were barricading the doors. Locking down because Greenwood was down there on the field. I was like, man, poor guy, you know, he's out there singing about America, but no one wants to put out his new stuff. Everyone knows it's not going to work except him.
Yeah, he's the only
lives
guy.
At his peak.
He's not
lives
in
at
on
his
the
peak.
Joke.
Oh,
well,
man.
Well, but if you think about Aerosmith and AC/DC and, you know, U2 and Springsteen, the cost of them just showing up and putting on a show.
Yeah.
Is enough for you or me to retire on.
That's right. So why don't they do that?
And, you know, that's just part of the problem. At some point, they're touring in the way they operate. And Live Nation and the big companies are just as guilty.
Right.
They do it just to sustain their empire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a matter of survival or this is what I love. It's what I'm doing. You know, Springsteen's still touring probably because he needs
the money.
He's got to...
Yacht,
you know,
and farms, and I mean, he's very, very wealthy man.
He's
of
very
course,
wealthy,
but
I mean, when you look at,
you got to pay taxes on all that stuff. I mean, that sounds kind of silly to say.
Yeah,
he's got ex-wives and kids, and you know, he does. I mean,
their lifestyles, and just they can't just show up and throw a PA up and do a gig,
right?
Like
right,
you
right.
can or I can,
right?
They've got to show up, you know, 6 days in advance of the show.
We got it so much better than they do.
And just well, it's just silly at some point because.
Yeah.
You look at the gross, you know, U2 when they play at the Texas Stadium, they'll probably gross $2 or $3 million.
Yeah.
In one night.
Their expenses might be 1.8 or something.
I mean,
yeah, or,
well,
yeah, right.
I mean, they
yeah.
might lose money on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't feel bad for them. I think it's funny. I just kind of, you can't, when what they're doing in effect is they're asking the public to, hey, help us keep all this going.
That's right.
We're going to charge you know, Live Nation, all their executives want to be wealthy executives. And
Ticketmaster, you know, gets their slice. I mean, everybody does.
Bono,
you know,
likes to position himself as the common man, but how common are you really? If you're so common,
yeah.
then why do you ask the common man to pay $200?
Well, and the underlying thing, we touched on this on the last show a couple times ago, the dinosaur acts, and we listened to the Ticket in Dallas, Texas. 1310 AM.
Greatest radio station.
Greatest radio
ever.
Station. The morning, the hardline guys, Mike Reiner. We're talking about the McCartney show specifically and how, and Reiner, Mike Reiner, the DJ, just, you know, one of the biggest Beatles rock, classic rock dudes, you know, and he was talking about the 91 McCartney tour, the one I went to when I was a teenager, was awesome because that was kind of the first, he played Texas Stadium. And, you know, in the 80s even, McCartney was still kind of doing his solo stuff, Wings, very seriously, new albums. He was a relevant artist.
Yeah.
But that 91 tour, man, was the first time he said, hey, man, we're going to get a big band together. We're going to come play the freaking Beatles, man.
He was his own tribute act.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was really, I mean, you know, you heard about him maybe playing Hey Jude live. And, But he didn't come serve it up like that. And, man, so we went to there, and, man, it was thrilling. And Reiner said the same thing. He just goes, man, it was thrilling sitting out there in a huge stadium hearing those songs being played by the guy that wrote them all was just an astounding thing. And it was kind of like, hey, we'll do this one more last time. You know, 91, the Beatles, remember, we were great. And it was phenomenal. Well, what happens? He puts out a live record, has a DVD, then he puts out a new record, then he does another tour in 94. And you're kind of like, okay. Yeah. And everybody goes. And then he comes back in 97. And then he comes back in 2000. And then he's doing backflips at the Super Bowl in 2002. Yeah. And just, you know, and now he's 68 almost. And this last show, they said, man, he sounded great. It was a great show. But Reiner was like, and he went to this one too, and he just goes, man, you just reach a point of diminishing returns with these guys. Yeah. They do a couple things well. I saw Springsteen at his best, that first reunion tour, you know, and I'd seen him solo. And so when he gets to the Super Bowl, man, and he's laboring to get on top of the piano, and he's doing a knee slide, and he hits the camera, it just starts to look kind of silly. I'm like, man, can he stop doing some of this stuff?
When he did the
diminishing,
knee slide.
Diminishing.
That was when
it's diminishing returns. Everyone's like, man, how can you not love Springsteen? I'm like, I'm not saying I don't like Springsteen. I'm just saying you just reach a point of diminishing returns. And U2's coming to town. I saw him on I was there for the Joshua Tree, man. I was there for Octung Baby. I saw him at the Super Bowl. Went to the show, the 2001, A Nation Mourns. U2's out there with a great new record. It's phenomenal. But they're just coming by. No one's bought their last couple records, you know, and they're just going to put up video screens and be bungee jumping from the rafters at Cowboy Stadium to play Where the Streets Have No Name. I'm just kind of, it's diminishing return. They feel they got to go top themselves every time.
Well, I think it's so much easier.
It's depressing.
Well, number one, a guy like McCartney or any of those nostalgia acts, they're not picking up new fans at a fast rate. Everyone already knows who they are.
Yeah, that's right.
You're just relying on the same millions and millions of people
who
to keep it going.
That's
who like you. And they make such a big deal.
And prices get higher. You got to buy them more
every year.
And you're just being ATM'd, man. You're like, man, he's just going to roll through here every summer and just take. I gave him 80 last time. Now he wants 120. Now he wants 150.
Well, and every time they go out on tour, they make it. McCartney.
This is the last time.
And
you know,
after a while, you know, it would be better if he just said, "Hey, you know, like Bob Dylan's on what he calls the never-ending tour.
He just plays. He's got a new album. He's playing his newer stuff.
And
you know,
and it's not a big. You know, Dylan sucks live now.
Yeah,
everybody knows that. But he plays smaller venues. It's $40 to get in. He just keeps going. He doesn't make a big deal out of it.
He doesn't say, it's the last time I'm ever playing Tambourine Man on this tour.
I'm more inclined to just go see somebody who doesn't make such a big deal out of it, and I can go drop $30 or $40, and it's,
yeah,
that's just it. It's not a huge deal, instead of making it out to be just the be-all, end-all. So.
Oh, man. Well.
You know, like Willie Nelson. Willie Nelson's just playing all over the place. It's $20 to get in.
Yeah.
No big deal.
He's still kind of doing it. You know, he's not
the
last time we're playing Whiskey River.
Yeah,
never, I think if you never say that, the biggest joke of all was The Who. After Keith Moon died in the late 70s, they did Who's Last.
I've seen him 8 times.
It was a record deal, a show-stopping deal. I was a huge Who fan. The last Who show ever. Watch it on pay-per-view. You know, it was on like HBO, 1983 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Roger Daltrey in parachute pants, you know.
Oh, I remember that.
So who's last? The last time you'll ever see The Who, videotape it, and they did it. That was 83. Then lo and behold, here they come, 89. Now, I was like in my concert-going prime, high school. And so, dude, we just get 20 tickets on like the 20th row of the Cotton Bowl. Stevie Ray Vaughan opened for The Who. Oh, my God. It was 112 degrees.
Yeah.
Vaughn comes out. It's just, I've never seen him. I thought he was just going to play the blues sitting on a stool. I didn't know anything about it. I knew it was all songs all the time. I was just beaten down by Stevie Ray Vaughan. Let me tell you what, dude. Life-changing. Comes out, you know, does the show. Pretty amazing. And The Who were great. 89. It was the last night of their tour. 89. Last show ever, blah, blah, blah. 1989. And look at them today. That was 20 years ago. They've never stopped.
Yeah.
But there's always this sort of do it one more last time, you know.
Well, you know what the story about the Who specifically that I've always heard is Townsend wanted to retire in 83.
Yeah.
He was done. Because Pete Townsend wrote all the songs.
Oh, yeah.
All the
he's licensed all the Tommy opera and stuff. It was a big hit on Broadway.
So Townsend is immensely wealthy.
And they sold a lot
wealthy.
Of songs. Sold a lot of songs to commercials.
He's immensely wealthy. But the other guys in The Who are just hired guns.
Daltrey, yeah.
Daltrey, the lead singer, does not partake in the big cash windfall necessarily.
No, that's right. Unless he's on the road.
He gets paid a salary off their live business and their appearances. And I've always heard that Daltrey and back when he was alive, John Entwistle, the bass player, when they needed money, they would come to Townsend and go, "Hey, look, dude, let's hit the road, man.
Yeah,
let's get the band back together."
Yeah.
I'm a little, you know.
A little light.
Got a note doing this Bentley that I bought. My castle in Scotland is
Townsend
behind.
Is a noted, very frank guy, very brutally honest. A good interview because he's very frank. And
really creepy.
Very creepy guy. And they were interviewing him recently for that Who deal they did, remembering the Who kind of thing. And he said this was modern day. Very nonchalantly, just, you know, said, "I had things I could do brilliantly. I could write music and compose music and play music as no one else could. John Entwistle on the bass was a genius." And he was a great bass player.
Mm-hmm.
"Keith Moon didn't play the drums like anyone else. Keith Moon was a genius. Then he just goes, "You know, Roger Daltrey, he was just a singer." You know, that's kind of what he said, you know. He was just a singer.
I bet they hate each other.
Oh, man. I bet they do, man. It was pretty, I go, man, that's a pretty crummy thing to say about your old mate. But maybe that's kind of the standing, though, just like
you said.
I've
seen Stu and Blue do interviews where they said the same thing about you.
That's just, yeah. Is that right? Well, they're right. Well, man, we were talking about Willie a second ago, man. I just kind of jumped up here because I was talking about this the other day. I was up at camp in Colorado. There's a guy, my good friend Keeler North. Keeler, he was one of the counselors up there. Big country music fan. He was always singing stuff. We play a lot of country songs around the fire and stuff at night, goofing around. And he came to me and said, "Hey," said, "man, have you ever heard a record by Willie Nelson called Phases and Stages?" And dude, I just kind of put down my. I was eating in the cafeteria. I just laid down my fork, you know, just wiped my mouth. Threw down my napkin, slowly rose from my chair. I didn't even know. I just put my hand on his shoulder, and I just nodded like, I know.
The only country record you own.
Maybe one of the few that I've bought. That's not true. Let me tell you what, though, man. In the vault, Phases and Stages, Willie Nelson, when we come back.
Phases and Stages. Circles and cycles, and scenes that we've all seen before. Let me tell you some more. Washing the dishes, scrubbing the floors, caring for someone who don't care anymore. Learning to hate.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's P2, Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio in Fort Worth. Call me, 817-733-5256. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Well, we're here in the beloved Pritchett Vault. Man, I've been inundated with people giving away records, albums. My collection here on the wall is now just overflowing. The great Kevin Haggard we talked about earlier brought me a big pile of great country albums. A lot of Jerry Jeff, Ray Wiley Hubbard, Fromholtz, stuff like that. You know, stuff I didn't have. So we got that peppered throughout now in there. My wife's grandfather, the great Fred May. Did you hear this, Kurt? Fred May, 88 years old, had his old record collection, you know, was moving, couldn't bear to throw it out, knew I had some records, Now he's 88 years old. You're like, well, what's he going to have? You know, I don't know. But has a big record collection. Said, man, come get it. Just, I'd love to have you. You know, be somewhere where you get someone's enjoying it. I just can't bear to throw them away or something.
Is that where you got the Les Paul?
Yeah.
And
Chester and Lester. And Chet Atkins and Les Paul album.
I was wondering where that came from.
Dude, wild stuff. But stuff I don't know a whole lot about. A little outside of my realm. But lots of Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Sinatra.
Wow.
Wes Montgomery, Les Paul. Herb Alpert, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
Any vinyl copies of my records?
No Kurt South in
no
there,
River City Blues in
no
there?
River City Blues vinyl.
Damn.
Ray Charles and a lot of Willie Nelson. Well, I already had this record. You know, is there a more... I'm going to clear my throat before I say this. Is there a more ubiquitous Texas artist...
Easy.
Kurt South than... our old friend Willie Nelson.
No.
I mean, is there anyone that just encapsulates Texas?
He's it.
Are we on a podcast right now being broadcast on Radio Free Texas? Are we cutting to the core of meaning, shedding new light by saying Willie Nelson is an influential Texas artist? Is that what I'm about to say? Stop me. How do you even start to talk about?
I've never heard that before.
How do you start to talk about Willie Nelson? But I don't think we've done a Willie record. I don't think we've done any Willie stuff. Because, man, let me tell you what. Willie, everyone knows the greatest hits. But I think you'll find most Willie guys out there, that's what they got. You know, they got Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cowboys, On the Road Again, all those great songs. But look at, I'm always surprised. Willie the songwriter, Willie the genius. Look at his greatest hits, Willie's greatest hits, and some that will be. 20 songs there. One song, written solely by Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
On the Road Again. Everything else is a cover or a co-write.
Yeah.
Now, the Waylon stuff, he wrote with Waylon on Mamas Don't Want Your Babies, Grow Up to Be Cowboys.
Did he help write Lukenbach? Lukenbach, Texas.
No, he wasn't. That wasn't on there. That was more of a Waylon tune.
Yeah, it was Waylon. You know? But for some reason, I thought he
a lot of Christophers. Angel Find Two Close the Ground. Help Me Make It Through the Night. Poncho and Lefty by Townes Van Zandt. A lot of Lefty Frizzell. Of course, Whiskey River, a cover. I didn't realize my heroes have always been cowboys. Heroes have always been cowboy. He didn't write that either. So Willie, rather than saying, well, he doesn't write a whole lot of songs. He wrote Crazy. He's a stylist. They once asked the great Miles Davis, who one of the great artists is, instrumentalists of all time. They said, man, who are some of the great instrumentalists, players of any instrument of all time? Miles Davis, great jazz trumpet player. And without thinking, he said, man, Willie Nelson. A lot of people laughed because people laugh at Willie's voice, his weird sounding guitar. But man, he's always been one of my favorite guitar players. So distinctive. That old guitar, you know, trigger, just that gut string, the fast little, Django Reinhardt little trills, and
his guitar solos are almost always just the vocal melody line.
Yeah, Oh man, he's always very simple, but then he'll surprise you with some runs and some real hard attacks and little, you know, flams and things on strumming. Love Willie. Well, man, in my opinion, I was like anybody else maybe early on in my music experience. I was like, you know, Willie, and I kind of played a Willie-esque solo one time. Reed Easterwood, the eccentric guy that came in a cousin of mine, played on our Suburban Legends album. He just goes, man, if you like Willie Nelson, you need to listen to Phases and Stages. I kind of checked it out. There wasn't a lot of, like, hits on there. I didn't recognize the songs. There's a lot of little weird intros, Phases and Stages, intro and stuff. It's a concept album. Phases and Stages. He goes, man, that is it's one of the greatest albums ever made.
Produced by Jerry Wexler.
Jerry Wexler, man, who did, tons of stuff. He did Bob Dylan's Slow Train Coming. He did tons of Wexler, did all that.
Man.
Soul stuff. I mean, he did it was recorded in Muscle Shoals. He pointed that out. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, the great David Hood. Playing bass. Yep. You know who his son is?
Mm.
Patterson Hood, frontman for Drive-By Truckers.
That's right.
Yeah.
A frequent Lefsetz subscriber, yes. Patterson Hood, writing in. But man, phases and stages. If you, a lot of people talk about Redheaded Stranger as the greatest Willie album. Certainly another great Willie concept album. But it had Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain. So some stuff on Redheaded Stranger that anybody would know from the greatest hits. Not so much with phases. You've got a Bloody Mary Morning. Side A, the first side I think it is the woman's perspective. It's a lot of sad songs. You know, her. She comes home maybe from being gone, and her jeans fit a little bit tighter than they did before,
A lot of minute and a half songs.
Then it stops and goes, phases and stages, circles and cycles, scenes that we've all seen before. Great stuff, man. Then you got side two is the man's perspective. A little more upbeat, a little more raunchy. He's out there on the road drunk somewhere. Of course, kicks off with just Bloody Mary Morning. Yeah, it's a Bloody Mary Morning,
that's
baby.
That's the only song on here. Well, there's two songs on here that I was familiar with.
Yeah.
Bloody Mary Morning and I Still Can't Believe You're Gone.
Yeah.
Those are the...
I Can't Believe You're Gone. Anyway, phases and stages, man. Willie Nelson. If you don't have it, if all you got is Willie's Greatest Hits and his live record and Stardust and...
his reggae album.
His reggae album and his Toby Keith covers album or whatever he did with him. Duets. By all means, go back, revisit Phases and Stages, Muscle Shoals, produced by the great Jerry Wexler, a concept album. Outstanding, and cementing Willie as, you know, the front of just, you know, country culture. I mean, as a guy, you know, his guitar playing, his singing on it, and all the songs written by him, I believe. Really showing who he is on this album, and regardless of whatever covers he does or stuff like that from now, he can do no wrong in my view, because he made Phases and Stages. We all love Willie. Love you, Willie. Well, Kurt South has been here, folks. Back. Revisiting the summer, talking about the torrid concert season, talking about Willie Nelson. Well, folks, thanks for listening to us on this edition of the P2 Podcast. Be sure and check out philpritchett.com. And is it KurtSouth.net? What are you?
KurtSouthMusic.com.
KurtSouthMusic.com. Go see Kurt at Fred's, the Hangover Hipster Party, every Sunday at noon, playing songs out there. Here, right here in Fort Worth. Come record at Trinidad. Call me 817-735-2256. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. On the P2 Podcast, we will have so much more coming. A new season, fresh. A new Phil Pritchett and the full band album we'll be discussing here in the coming weeks as it gets ready for release. Very excited about that. Stay tuned. Email us. Thanks for listening, and take care out there.
Before, though the jeans fit a little bit tighter than they did before.